So here we go. I'm going to hand over to our very first, very special guest, Paul Breslin.
Former IT journalist, so I got to write an awful lot about technology, got to play with an awful lot of technology. But better still, these days I get to play with the stuff before it's launched. Should I do that? Do you want to help? There's a go. How's that? Can you hear me now? And we'd have a chat about social media, which is the next big thing. The next big thing.
There we are. How's that? Thank you very much. Yes, I'll be here all week. So, social media, this is where we actually get to play with the stuff. We get to do all the cool stuff. You've all heard about Web 2.0. Web 2.0 is a complete farce, I'm afraid. It's a con. It's actually just Web 1.0, but it actually works, much like this presentation. So when we're talking about Web 2.0 stuff and social media, really what we're talking about is interaction and the ability to communicate with people. And really, isn't that what the web was all about all along anyway? So if I can just do a quick poll. First off, Facebook. Who's got a Facebook page? Facebookers, oh, yes, yes, no lives. Right, YouTube, who's posted stuff to YouTube? My goodness, this is excellent. Oh, fantastic, you're already doing it all. MySpace, does anybody remember MySpace? Oh, it seems so quaint now, doesn't it? It's all very old school. Bebo, you're all Bebos. Yes, there we are. Get the demographic right, yes. Twitter, are we all Twittering? Not so many Twitters, that's interesting. I think Twitter's for old people. Clearly, Twitter's been and gone. And Second Life, we are twits, yes. Second Life, a couple of die-hard virtual people. There we are. Delighted to see you here in the flesh. This is what we're talking about, of course. This is for the teachers in the audience who have no idea what we were just asking about. The various pages, the various looks and feel. This is MySpace. This is my favourite one. This is you probably can't see it terribly well from there, but this is a librarian's page, and it's still there, and it gets an awful lot of traffic. But it looks hideous, I have to say. So all those times I argue with marketing departments about it's the message, they say, no, it's the medium, and I say, no, it's the message, and they say, no, no, it's the way it looks. It's all rubbish. Quite frankly, it just doesn't work at all. Social media is all about interactivity. It's all about getting involved and not just giving something back, but creating it yourself. Users are the content. One of the big killer apps when the web first started that really drove a lot of traffic was a simple email. You know, people trying to stay in touch, getting in touch for the first time, making that connection at a business level, at a personal level. It's one of those things that really does drive the uptake of all of this kind of thing, and we're seeing that delivered today through social media as well. There are a few issues, of course. You've got the whole privacy issue, and I'm trusting that you're all being good citizens and actually not giving out your information to everybody online, and all you Bebo guys are out there and you've not got your home phone number and your mum's bank account details and all of that upline. Really don't get into that because it stays around forever. I once had my ID stolen, leased temporarily by a nice man in the Philippines who was trying to set up a factory and thought it'd be a really good idea if he convinced all of his investors that he had lots of support around the world. And so he looked around the world for people who were vaguely online, who had some contact details up but not a lot, and he found my name and set up a fake free webmail account with my name and then started telling people that I was one of the sponsors of his project. I was fully supportive and I'd given him a lot of money, and if they wanted to contact me, they could happily use this email address and they'd get in touch with me. And of course, it was routed back around to his email account. Thankfully, somebody didn't do that and they just used Google and they looked me up and discovered my real email address and asked me whether I had any interest in a ceramics factory in in the Philippines, and thankfully my interest in ceramics is quite limited. And I was able to say, no, I've got no idea what you're talking about. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that can happen. And social media seems to generate a lot of heat and a lot of noise about that. So you've just got to think about it for a while. The other thing is, of course, it's cached forever. It's always available, and you can always find things. You're not applying for jobs yet, but I've been hiring people for a few years now, and I always Google for them. And it's amazing what people think they've forgotten they ever posted on nz.comp 25 years ago. It's all still sitting there. So that's a really big thing you've got to think about. You know, you're not just replying to somebody's email anymore. You're actually creating a document that's going to be sitting around for a very long time. There's a lot of debate as well at corporate level. Corporations getting involved in this, they're always very interested in trying to get out to customers and to potential employees as well. So you've got to wonder whether there's a lot of truth in what's going on with social media, whether it is the next big wave for the media, or whether it is just wishful thinking. We would all like it to be true. Is that the case? You know, it's one of those issues that that needs to be dealt with. The one I hear all the time is, oh, it's just all, you know, it's just a bit of a fad. You know, it'll all disappear. I'm still hearing from people who think the internet will disappear shortly. And you've probably got to say it's been one of the most successful technological rollouts of all time, because it's been up and running for 20 odd years and has never failed. So I really don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But then there's the herd mentality. So for those of you who are on Bebo now, did you start on Bebo? Did you start on Facebook and move across? That's one of the big issues for some of these sites. People move. They follow the trend. And this is the trend that they're following at the moment. This is the growth path for Facebook from August 2006 to, I think, the end of 2007. In three different countries, the yellow dotted line at the top there is, if I can see my slides, Canada. For some reason, they don't get out much in the wintertime. It might be a bit cold. I'm not sure. They just stay at home, and they all jump on Facebook. The growth trends there, are, you know, it's your classic J curve that all the marketing guys really like the look of, because it means early adopters, only a few, you can get everything sorted, make it work, and then suddenly it takes off like a crazy thing, and you make millions and millions of dollars. And by millions and millions, I do mean millions and millions. In July 2005, MySpace sold for $580 million, and as we've seen, MySpace is pretty much old hat now. All the viewers, are they consumers, viewers, readers? They're probably participants of MySpace. They've all moved to YouTube. YouTube, $1.65 billion US dollars. That's started by a couple of guys, you know, at home. It's an outrageous sum, but it's dwarfed completely by Facebook, which they sold a fraction of for $240 million, basically valuing Facebook at $15 billion US dollars. I mean, it's insane for something that a couple of guys started in their dorm room while they were working at university. It's just incredible. But it's also rather tricky to use in a lot of instances, isn't it? And you're tied basically to the desktop, to the laptop, to the PC, to the Mac, to the device that you see before us. I mean, we've got an array of them here. They're all very expensive. They're quite clumsy. This is a Dell, so it's very clumsy. That's much nicer, but he's using it, so, you know, well, it's not mine, although I do have device envy. Is that the newer version? Is that the G5 or is that the Intel? It's all good. See, it's just a tool. That's the key here. It's just a tool. There are plenty of new devices coming along. And I brought along a couple of slides to show you from this is a new device that Hewlett-Packard is working on, I think this one is. This is a new type of laptop. It's insanely gorgeous looking, very flat, but it's still a laptop, isn't it? It's very recognizable. It's still what we're quite used to seeing on the desktops. This is another one. It's getting a little bit better. I quite like the newspaper view here. But again, we're still talking about a fairly basic standard approach to laptop design. This is far more exciting, though, for me. This is the One Laptop Per Child program. And I don't know if you've come across this. It's being run out of MIT Media Lab in the US. A chap called Nicholas Negroponte is leading the charge. He said, let's build a laptop for $100 US. So a device that kids can use in the third world with all the bells and whistles that you see before us, all the stuff you need for $100 US. And they said, it's ridiculous. Will never happen. It's just too expensive. The power pack. I spoke to a chap a couple of years ago from Toshiba. He said the power pack alone for your laptop costs $200. So how on earth are you ever going to build one that will cost less than 100? It's impossible. And there it is. And I'd have to say I'd have one of those, wouldn't you? Isn't that gorgeous? It's got Wi-Fi built in, so you can stay connected. It's got a full-size keyboard. It's robust. You know, we're talking about bashing it around on the bus, robust. Throw it in a corner, not like your iPod. It's very, very sturdy and quite useful. And I think that's gorgeous. And that's $100. And we were talking in the plane on the way down. There's a program so that you can, if you buy one, you buy another one for somebody in the third world. I can't remember. What were we talking about? What did we call it? The one. So you buy one and you buy another one. Yeah, buy one, get one free. That's it, yeah. See, there we are. Buy one, get one free. And that is quite a tremendous program. And I'd buy dozens of them. But that's the first generation one. This is the new one. And I've got to say, I've got to get me one of those. That is fantastic. Look at that. Touch screen. Folds in half. It has short-range wireless as well, so you can sit there. There's another photo I didn't put in. Sit there and play games with the person opposite you, share files. That one's $75. So I'll have 100 of those. I mean, that's fantastic. I've got two daughters. I've got a 6-year-old girl and a 3-year-old girl, and they have no fear of these kinds of things at all. They spend half their life on the computer. My eldest daughter learned to read, learned her alphabet from Winnie the Pooh, knocking over honey pots and putting them back in the right order, and she learned her alphabet in about 3 days because it was fun. And the software I bought from the warehouse for $10, you know, it's ludicrous. We can turbocharge our children using these kinds of things, and I think that's probably a very good idea. But there is another factor coming in. There is a new player in town, and I have to put my hand up here and don the Vodafone cloak of contempt. I am a Vodafone employee, but the mobile phone is rapidly growing into this space. You know, forget about the laptop. Devices this sort of size have as much capability for staying in touch, because that's what they do. It's all about communication. So this is the growth chart for the number of mobile phones in millions. At the moment, we have 3.3 billion people using mobile phones around the world. That's half the world's population. The rate of growth is far outstripping fixed line growth, even though, of course, you need your fixed line for your broadband, for serious broadband. So what we're seeing instead is a huge uptake in mobiles, to the point where by the year 2020, there'll be more people using mobile phones than can read around the world. And I think if you're thinking about your future career paths, you've really got to consider a world where more people have mobile phones than can actually just read. I mean, that blows my mind. I don't know quite what that's going to mean. I'm trusting you guys will sort it out, because it's going to be an issue that you're all going to have to face. And quite what that means for the world is beyond me. But it's happening, and it's happening at a great rate of knots. Vodafone bought Vodafone India, and every month they add 1 million new customers, every single month. And every quarter they build the network out to a size, they add a network the size of Vodafone New Zealand's network every single quarter. So it's every 3 months. The people are leapfrogging a technology they never had. The fixed line to the home was just never there. So they're suddenly bursting onto the scene and getting connected. That's just India. China's next, South America, and then, of course, you've got Africa. And there we're talking about a capability to do things like micropayments, something else we were talking about on the way down. This ability to use this as a banking system. So it's not just a phone. The SIM card in the back is very similar. It's identical, in fact, to the credit card SIM cards that are coming out, the smart cards. Now, rather than having somebody who is earning minimum wage and desperately struggling to make ends meet, carrying cash with them in some of the most remote parts of the world, we give them an electronic device. There is no cash involved, so they don't get murdered for their bag of money, which happens all far too frequently. Instead, it's all deposited directly into the bank. The banks stop at the end of the street in many parts of Africa. They don't come out to the villages and to where the people are. So by extending the reach of the banking network, you actually make life a lot more civilized for a lot more people. And it encourages entrepreneurship. We have a program, if you've all got old cell phones at home, any kind, don't care what they are, please recycle them. Don't just chuck them in the bin. They're full of heavy metals. I mean, there aren't that many heavy metals in something that size, but when you've got 100,000 of them, they can really cause an environmental problem. So please recycle them. Bring them back to the Vodafone shops. You'll see the little tubes in the doorway. Chuck them in there. Chuck in the old chargers as well, although I keep those because everybody needs several chargers. But what we do with them is we send them off to an outfit in Australia. They strip them down. They refurbish them and send them off to the Philippines, where they're used as free... communication tools by people setting up small businesses. They're typically women in very, very poor areas who've got no access to infrastructure. So we give them cell phones. They can then stay in touch. They can communicate with suppliers. They can communicate with customers. They can actually build a life for themselves, which is really quite tremendous. So we've been doing social media stuff, YouTube, Bebo, TradeMe, all of that kind of thing on the mobiles for about a year now. It's increasing, you know, these are the corporate figures for you. It's increasing the amount of data 40%. There are 1.5 million customers signed up for mobile internet around the world already. Here in New Zealand, we streamed 2.5 million videos over the phones in the last year. I mean, that's just in 12 months. It seems an astonishing amount to me. But really, there's an awful lot more coming down the pipeline there. Once you mobilize social media, that really does deliver a whole new mechanism for you. This is a quote from Nicholas Negroponte with his One Laptop Per Child program, which I've put in the wrong place in my presentation, so I'll read it out to you now anyway. He says, you know, why not just give them cell phones instead of laptops? As he says here, you know, there are a huge number of them, but the cell phone is not a learning device. And really, the next generation laptop should be a book, which brings us back full circle, really. The book is a fantastic medium, really. You can market, you can fold pages over, you can annotate it as you go, you can lend it to somebody, it's a good form factor, the battery life's pretty good, you can put it in your pocket, you can take it with you, you can leave it behind, you can share it far more readily than any of these. You know, if you've ever tried to get Bluetooth to work on a Dell, let me tell you, books are great, it's fantastic. But then there's one other thing as well, and I've brought a little corporate video clip for you, but we don't have the sound. That's all right, I'll just make it up as I go along. This is Facebook.
Just think how great it would be to check it every time you're... Well, nowhere near your computer.
This is Facebook on the iPhone. The thing with the iPhone is I stole that off YouTube as well, so, you know, quite frankly. The thing with the iPhone is it is gorgeous to use as a technological piece of kit, it's fantastic. But as a social media tool, it's unstoppable because you take it with you everywhere you go. It's insanely easy to use. It connects via Wi-Fi or the 3G network, whatever you've got going, and it just makes life very easy. The interface itself is just fantastic. So I thought I would throw that in there and then throw it open for any questions and have a bit of a chat about it all. So thank you all for listening to me ramble for 10 minutes. I've much warmed up now, and I could probably start again and do the presentation in far more slicker manner, but I'll stop while I'm ahead. Thank you.
Just checking, right. Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Paul, for that. Now, who has any questions to throw to Paul about what he does as a job or mobile communications in general? Come on, give me a hand up, somebody.
Over.
Absolutely. That's cool, no worries. Well, we can always collect them and pass them on at the end. Oh, no, have we got one? Nope.
No, we're going to be charging you an awful lot more from here on in. No, with my Vodafone hat on, no charges, thing of the past, really. We're moving away from charging customers altogether. No, we will still be charging you, but it can only go down, can't it? I mean, bandwidth is not a scarce resource. Bandwidth is cheap and cheerful, and the more the merrier. And CityLink's providing the bandwidth for all of this and doing a fantastic job of encouraging people to take that view, that really... bits on the network are just bits, you know. You can be talking, you can be video, you can be data, it really doesn't matter. Pack them in, send them through, the more the merrier, really. So, yeah, we'll be the thing with the iPhone in particular, is that it makes it so easy to use a lot of data that you've got to. That's the good thing about it. You know, you want people to be doing that, so we'll price accordingly. Although I can't tell you anything at all about it because we signed all these horrendous non-disclosure agreements with Apple, so I can't tell you anything at all about the iPhone. Nothing at all. But it'd be really cool. One more, one at the front. We have a microphone for you. Here it comes.
What do you see as the future for the mobile phone, given that at the moment screen reading technology is only just caught up with things as they are now?
Mm. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, the third screen is what we often refer to it as. You've got TV, old school TV. You've got laptops and computers, of course, and this is the third screen. It's a limit. There is definitely a limit to it because of the size, but that's rapidly being overcome. You know, if you're talking technological limits, I met a chap from Toshiba a few years ago whose job was to go around the world, meet up with other like-minded people and try and invent the future. And he was talking about laptops that roll up like a sushi roll, screens that project onto the wall in front of you. We're going to see mini projectors in the next 5 years that will fit inside a laptop. So suddenly you're talking Star Trek with holograms popping up in midair. You know, it's never ending. Of course, battery life's always a problem, but you know, that's another matter, really. I can't see if there are hands.
I know, it's hot to tell. Any more questions?
Ah, that's the best part. None whatsoever. Don't tell the teachers. No. You need to stay at school. Stay at school. No, I joined a newspaper in 1995 with no skills, training or experience whatsoever. And as far as I'm aware, I'm probably one of the last journalists in New Zealand that was able to do that. I had always wanted to be a journalist and done absolutely the wrong thing by studying everything but journalism. So I was very, very lucky that I found a newspaper that was willing to train me and teach me not only about IT and all about this side of things, but also about journalism. These days, I managed to get all the way up through the ranks to be the editor of the newspaper before I left. And when I was hiring, I wouldn't look at anybody who hadn't been to at least Polytech to get a diploma in journalism, which is... It's not ideal because really what you want in a journalist or in PR in particular is somebody who's got a lot of experience out there and who's seen a lot of things and who can communicate. So really you don't need to have been to university to do that, but these days that seems to be at the very bottom. You need that rubber stamp to even get a foot in the door. But once you get there, it is bags of fun. I mean, being a journalist is perhaps the best job in the world because you can march up to important people and ask them irritating and snotty questions and they have to answer. I mean, you can't ask for better. It's great. Somebody up at the back, I think. I can see a hand.
Yep. I was going to make a comment. You know, we were looking at the different interface devices. You'll be able to hear me now. I think probably what will happen is that you'll have one communication device, which you may even wear like a wristwatch, and you'll have a variety of different interfaces. You'll probably have a handset, like a cell phone that you'll talk to, or you might have a book that you open, or you might even have a laptop. But they'll actually all be just different parts of the one device.
So the person area network.
Yeah.
I think that's probably about right, isn't it? I mean, I don't see any reason why the cell phone has to stay in that shape. A pen shape would do me quite nicely. I don't need all the buttons on it because I just say to it, you know, call Helen, and it knows Helen's phone number, and away we go. So it doesn't need to be that shape. It doesn't need a screen. But I do need a screen. I'd like something that was larger, something like the PlayStation Portable, which is a gorgeous screen. But which is hopelessly marketed because they seem to think it's a game machine when in fact it's not. It's quite a sophisticated computer. The Bluetooth, you know, you walk into the house with this. I had a colleague who had a Mac, curse him, and he would walk up to his Mac with his cell phone in his pocket and it would log him on. So the Mac had a Bluetooth thing hanging out the back. It would say, oh, I recognize you. I know all your passwords. You're logged on as you walk up to it. So we're really extending the ability of the computer to do a lot more things. And I think you're right. You know, I'd rather have something hanging off my ear as a speaker rather than being embedded in a box that's sitting in front of me. It just doesn't seem to make much sense. So, yeah, I can see there's endless possibilities there. And there's a lot of people working on them. Power is a huge concern. So you're talking about things like fuel cells. You know, well, good luck getting that on a plane. But the other one is this same chap from Toshiba was working with Nike with small, tiny springs in the heels of your sneakers. And as you walk along, you generate electricity and power up a battery, which you can use for any of these devices, which is, you know, quite cool, really. A little bit geeky, but quite cool.
Contrary to what you or Paul Negroponte, is it?
Nicholas Negroponte, yeah.
Think there are lots of teachers out there, and perhaps a lot here, who are using the cell phone in their classrooms for educational purposes. So, yeah. You know, they're teaching students to read and write and do Shakespeare and all sorts of other interesting things using the cell phone. I don't personally, but it is happening, I believe. And so it could be a fantastic teaching and learning device if maybe the cell phone companies really got into it and did some research and worked on it.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I think Nicholas is coming at it from the point of view of the sort of the laptop world and trying to shrink down a laptop to fit the model that he's got, whereas cell phones, I think, are already there and already moving up into that space. There'll be, you know, we always talk about convergence, the big ICT buzz phrase, convergence. It's actually happening, you know. I was having a play with the next version of this. This is a little BlackBerry. The next one has enough processing power that they're selling it as a replacement for the laptop. So you walk into an office, plug it into the screen and the keyboard and just use it as your communication hub. You know, you don't need the laptop at all anymore. So certainly in classrooms as well, I've seen we're engaged in a program in Hamilton with Road Street School where they use it as, again, it's back to social media. When the kids in the classroom do well, they get to come up to the front of the classroom, make a video call to mum and dad, and it's all carefully set up by the teachers in the background. You know, take this phone with you to work today and we'll call you at about midday. So they can tell them that they aced the test or that they've scored well in whatever work they're doing. And they get the recognition in front of their peers and they get to show mum and dad, and it includes mum and dad as well. And I think that's tremendously powerful. You know, as a parent, I want to know what they're up to at school and how well they're doing. And when they're excited, I want them to tell me all about it. So... yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think there's a great place for it. But you're not supposed to be surfing the net looking for the answers to the questions off to one side when they're in the middle of the test. That's probably a no-no. Although, great initiative. You might have to wave because I can't see through the glare of the lights. But no, that's all good. Thanks for listening to me ramble. Hope you have a great time today and hear lots of interesting things and really get energised about it. It's a great industry to work in and there's plenty of potential out there. I mean, it's not just an industry anymore, is it? It's more than that. It's practically a way of life, which sounds a little scary, but it is bags of fun. So thanks for inviting me down and thanks a lot. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thanks to Paul for coming down and sharing his fun work. He does have a lot of fun. I've been to their offices. They've got the coolest place to work, man. Toys a go-go. That gives you an insight into one aspect of the whole area, the mobile communications and technology side of it.